Good morning again, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The next matter on our oral argument calendar is A230581, Nicholas Schreyer, Appellant versus USIC Locating Services, LLC. The podium, you can adjust. I don't know if you were here earlier when I made these announcements, but you can adjust it with a switch in the front to where you're comfortable. The appellant will have 15 minutes for the initial argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent, you'll have 15 minutes. Please state your name at the beginning of your argument and how you'd like us to refer to you. There is a recording being made of this. It'll be released on our website later today. And there is a live stream of this on Zoom. Those are the only recordings that should be made. Counsel, when you're ready, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm John Carlson here on behalf of Mr. Schreyer, and using Mr. Carlson is just fine. Your Honors, this is a notice pleading state. And that really boils, that's what this case boils down to, is was adequate notice given in the complaint that was filed in this matter. The court thought that there was nothing tying respondent to what was alleged in the complaint, when in fact the complaint laid out where the incident occurred, how the incident occurred, what USIC did wrong that led to the injury of the plaintiff. And so the complaint gives notice to USIC of exactly why they are responsible for what happened.
Let me ask you about that. What facts are alleged in the complaint that indicates that USIC owed your client a duty of care?
The facts are that they failed to mark the electrical wire at the location where my client was drilling with the auger, and that as a result, he was electrocuted and injured, and it was their negligent failure to do that. A negligence was alleged in the complaint. Respondent has indicated that the Barr case requires that the negligence allegation kind of be thrown out and we looked at everything else. If we had pled just negligence, if we had pled that USIC was negligent and as a result our client was injured and is entitled to recover, they would be correct. But the fact is we specifically allege that they were negligent, which assumes they had a duty, they breached that duty, and that duty is that breach is approximate cause of our client's injury. And they were given notice of where this happened, when it happened. Had we only pled negligence and said they were negligent and therefore he was injured, they would be correct in their interpretation of the Barr decision.
So you agree that allegations of legal conclusions in the complaint should be set aside?
If there is nothing in the complaint factually to support that, yes.
So what's the facts alleged in the complaint that USIC owed your client a duty of care?
I think the fact that they failed to mark, and we pled negligence in taking the negligence allegation and utilizing that to say that their negligent failure to mark resulted in his injury. And the difference, I think, in terms of the two is had we only pled their negligence caused his injury without facts to support that. It's a little bit like the car accident case where you say the form that we referenced in our brief. The person driving down the road was negligent, operating the car negligently, and that resulted in the injury.
But here we don't know any of the facts to connect USIC to this property. I mean, we don't know if the negligence responsibility, the theory of liability is, oh, they owned the property, so they should have gotten somebody to, or they buried the cable all those years ago, or they were hired on May 5th of 2020 and they never showed up. I mean, there's just missing pieces, facts pieces, as to what the actual theory of negligence is. Isn't that a problem?
No, Your Honor, because the complaint indicates that they negligently failed to mark it before that date.
But why did they have to do it? I guess that's the question. Where is the fact alleging that they were obligated to, in fact, do that, which you assert they failed to do?
The fact that we have alleged that they were negligent in failing to do so, obviously, as we proceed through discovery and things like that, our client is a laborer who's out there drilling a hole. we don't have access to USIC's records until we conduct discovery, et cetera. And so we have information and belief that they were supposed to mark that before they began digging, and we allege in the complaint that they negligently failed to mark it before he dug the hole, and as a result, he was injured.
But isn't the difference between the analogy you want us to draw with the court's form, the Supreme Court's Form 8 complaint with the driving negligence, that that complaint says that it occurred on a public highway. And so the complaint identifies that the defendant negligently drove a motor vehicle against the plaintiff on a public highway. Here, which you can infer from those facts, that the defendant owed a duty of care to the plaintiff to drive not negligently on a public highway. Here, as Judge Bjorkman indicated, we don't have the facts to indicate, alleged in the complaint, to indicate why failing to mark the buried cable prior to August 27th, 2020, why there was a duty to mark it non-negligently, because we don't know anything about 585 Waycliffe Drive, who owns that property. We don't know what the duty USIC owed to your client was with regard to where the incident occurred. And how can you address that?
When we plead negligence, the negligence pleading assumes that there was a duty, that there was a breach of that duty, and that that was a cause of the injury.
But and why isn't that the legal conclusion that Barr says, those that broad legal conclusion that Barr says, and even Halva continues to say, that it, we don't presume. There actually needs to be facts from which we can infer.
And the facts are alleged in the complaint where we say that they failed to mark it at that property before he drilled. You know, we don't have the evidence of the contract. We know that they were supposed to mark it.
Well, but wouldn't your client's employer, I mean, somebody had to have contacted USIC, and isn't USIC entitled to know what the alleged facts are that maybe the landscaping company your client worked for hired them on such and such a date? I mean, isn't that the kind of fact you have to allege? Or the homeowner hired them or whatever?
Well, it's notice pleading, Your Honor. And so they were given notice that it happened at this location. They have access to those records. My client, he's not the employer. He doesn't necessarily have access to the employer's records either, other than he knows that USIC was supposed to come out and mark that. And so through discovery, obviously, then you can develop all of these issues. But the fact is, it's a notice pleading state. They've been given notice that we are claiming they were negligent on that date at that location for failing to mark that wire before our client drilled. And they are the ones in possession of that knowledge until discovery occurs. And so without further evidence, it's hard to plead that they had to do it at this. You know, it's not specific pleading, for example, in a fraud case. It's notice pleading. And so we've given them notice that they negligently failed to mark that wire. They have access to that information, and through discovery, we will find out who called, who contracted, and those things. But the fact is, on information and belief, it's that they were supposed to, and they have that, and they know that.
Why not say that your client, on information and belief,
I
thought that they were going to do that?
I think the complaint saying that they negligently failed to do so by that time provides that notice. Is it artfully drafted? Maybe not. Maybe the court doesn't consider it artfully drafted. But again, it's a notice pleading. And so they were given notice of the when, the where, the why, the how. And through the litigation process, more can be developed. So it really boils down to, did they have notice of what this claim is about under Rule 8? And did the complaint give them that adequate notice? And can the case move forward? And given how the complaint reads with again, the where, the why, the how, the when, and that they negligently failed to mark it before he dug the hole, gives them notice of that claim, and that's what's required under Rule 8.
Was the dismissal with prejudice?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. And you know, there's that concern. It's potentially a 2-year statute of limitations. Comes to us a month before the statute's going to run. You have very limited time to develop all of this stuff. And so I would ask that my client not be punished when, in fact, they have been given notice of the claim and notice of the facts surrounding the claim. They are the ones that have access to that information. So in that regard, I would ask that the court remand this to the district court to be heard by the district court, that the fact the complaint does in fact meet the requirements of Rule 8. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court and counsel. My name is Ellen Anderson. I appear on behalf of USIC Locating Services, LLC, and Ms. Anderson, our counsel, is just fine. The only issue this court needs to decide is whether the sole allegation that describes what USIC did or didn't do satisfies the notice pleading standard. Judge Sullivan below decided it did not, and this court should affirm. Excluding the word negligently, as your honors have pointed out, this court must. The only allegation is that USIC failed to mark the buried cable prior to August 27th, 2020. That allegation establishes two separate incidents, that Mr. Schreier was injured, and that at some point prior to that injury, USIC was supposed to do something.
I don't know if I agree with you on that. I saw you make that argument in your brief about the distinction between the Form 8 pleading and this case. And the reason why I'm not sure is that isn't it really alleged that there's ongoing negligence from the point prior to August 27th when the buried cable was negligently marked until the point that counsel's client hit the buried cable with the auger? I mean, it's basically, the incident continued from the moment that the buried cable was negligently marked until the moment that the plaintiff made contact with it.
Am I wrong about that? No, Your Honor, you're not. That's one way to read it. The problem here is that the allegation is that USIC failed to mark the buried cable sometime between, at some point in before the injury that we're not aware of, and like Your Honor described, this ongoing negligence. This ongoing continuation or allegation of negligence. The issue here is that USIC doesn't have fair notice of what its failure to do so at some point prior to the injury has to do with Mr. Schreier.
Well, I mean, doesn't the complaint indicate that its failure to mark the buried cable is what led to Mr. Schreier hitting the buried cable with the auger? I mean, we can infer that from the allegations, right?
There aren't sufficient facts in the complaint to describe what USIC's failure to do something has to do with Mr. Schreier. The complaint could have said USIC failed to mark a buried electrical cable at 25 Dr. Martin Luther King Drive. It's not clear what USIC's failure to do something cause had anything to do with Mr. Schreier. And counsel argues that notice pleading is good enough. But just 2 days ago, this court affirmed a decision in Martin & Martin versus Mid-American Festival Corp. in which a complaint was that failed to state a claim for relief on a negligence theory was affirmed for dismissal with prejudice because this court found that there weren't sufficient facts to describe what the defendant's theory, what the plaintiff's theory of defendant's liability towards the plaintiff was. Because even in a notice pleading jurisdiction, as this court found in Martin and Martin, the complaint still needs to state a valid legal claim. Here, there aren't sufficient facts to describe why USIC has a why Mr. Schreier has a valid legal claim against USIC for negligence, because there aren't sufficient facts to describe why a failure to do something would incur USIC's liability to Mr. Schreier.
What facts are missing? What should have been in this complaint to, as a practical matter, give your client fair notice of what this case is about?
The theory of liability of negligence. So what relationship, if any, USIC had to the landowner, what relationship, if any, USIC had to Mr. Schreier, and a time frame as to when this was supposed to occur. It's not on USIC to need to go back and search all of its records as to when or what it had to do with the alleged address of the injury. Instead, the law is clear in Minnesota that the complaint needs to give fair notice to USIC of the complaint's theory of negligence. Your Honor, I think your question hits exactly on the point that the lower court correctly found there are absolutely no facts that tie USIC to Mr. Schreier's accident. And that's exactly the kind of facts that would be needed.
To play out what you just said, though, I mean, the complaint states the address of where it occurred, the conduct that is at issue with regard to your client. I mean, the difference between the two types of complaints that you've stated seems minimal to me in terms of the burden on your client being able to look at its files. It's still going to go look at the address in either complaint. It's going to look at an address, 585 Waycliffe Drive, and it's going to see, did we do work there? When did that happen? So what is the lack of notice to your client that's caused by this complaint that would be remedied by the complaint you proposed?
The theory of negligence, Your Honor. So whether there was any kind of relationship with the landowner, if the relationship was owed to Mr. Schreier, the time period as well. So there simply just isn't enough for USIC to defend itself against this kind of complaint. It doesn't put USIC on fair notice of what Mr. Schreier is alleging causes USIC's liability towards Mr. Schreier. I also wanted to address counsel's point that these facts would come out in discovery. Discovery is only available once a complaint satisfies notice pleading. It is not appropriate to drag USIC through an extensive or costly discovery process simply because if the complaint does not satisfy even Minnesota's liberal notice pleading standard. That's the purpose of the notice pleading standard, is to put USIC on notice of the theory of liability, and discovery is only available if the complaint can satisfy that standard. The complaint here does not.
Do you agree that the dismissal is with prejudice?
Yes, Your Honor, the dismissal was with prejudice, but there are a few different reasons why the court should nonetheless affirm the dismissal with prejudice. I think first and foremost, it's because the plaintiff never asked for anything but for leave to amend. There was no point at any of the three opportunities that the plaintiff had to request leave to amend, at least three, as I see them. First, when USIC filed its motion to dismiss. Second, when that motion was granted, and before this court as well. The plaintiff did not request leave to amend, and this court may only reverse a decision for dismissal with prejudice for an abuse of discretion. There have been no arguments made that the court below abused its discretion that would warrant reversing a judgment for dismissal with prejudice, that would warrant such an allegation of that the lower court abused their discretion.
Did you argue that the plaintiff didn't ask for leave to amend in response to your motion to dismiss before the district court?
Well, Your Honor, no, we didn't argue as much in our brief.
Not that you didn't argue it, but that the plaintiff didn't ask for leave to amend in response to your motion to dismiss.
Well, Your Honor, our point is that the issue for leave to amend was not raised below, and so there's no reason for this court now to reverse.
But they did. The conclusion of their opposition brief, the plaintiff argued, in the event the court is sympathetic to defendant's arguments, plaintiff respectfully proposes that the appropriate remedy would be to allow an amendment of the complaint, not dismissal of the action with prejudice.
Excuse me, Your Honor, let me be clear. It was not argued in the district court below, and therefore it's been waived on appeal.
Why isn't that an argument before the district court that was from their brief to the district court? Their opposition brief.
Your Honor, I would have to review, but I do know that the court will only be able to reverse for abuse of discretion, and there was no argument before this court that the lower court abused its discretion, such that remand for leave to amend or reversing the court's decision to dismiss with prejudice was abuse of discretion. I think it's also important to keep in mind that the Martins case requires that any decisions for failure to state a claim, a complaint that fails to state a claim, can be dismissed with prejudice. It's a matter of the district court's discretion, and that's exactly what we have here. Unless there are any further questions from the bench, I would simply urge the court to affirm, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, counsel.
Just a couple points, Your Honors. To say that there is nothing whatsoever tying USIC's conduct to the injuries suffered by a plaintiff is wrong. The complaint specifically alleges that they failed to mark the cable and that as a result of that failure, that negligent failure, Mr. Schreier was injured. And so there is specific language in the complaint that ties their actions to the injury suffered by Mr. Schreier. And so for the district court to say that and for it to be argued again is absolutely wrong. There is that allegation in the complaint.
But isn't the problem there, so paragraph 5 of the complaint says as a result of USIC's negligence. So again, use the legal term negligence. Part of the problem is that USIC negligently or failing to mark the buried cable, that could apply to any person, right? I mean, many people didn't mark the cable, presumably, not just USIC. And the key thing I think that your counterpart is hitting on is that there's no allegation of why USIC had to mark the cable with relation to your client. Do you care to respond to that?
Sure. And what I'll do is I'll tie in something she said. You know, she indicated that, well, we don't know what USIC's relationship to the property owner was. We don't know all these things and how that relates to the claim of negligence. And if you look at this, the allegation is that they negligently failed to mark the cable. And the negligence, again, like I said, assumes the duty, the breach of the duty, et cetera. And so who owns the property is really irrelevant if the allegation is that they failed to mark that cable at that property, resulting in Nicholas Schreier's injury. Not the property owner's injury, not anybody else's injury, but in his injury. And that's the tie. And the complaint read as a whole reads, they were negligent, the negligent led to the injury, et cetera, et cetera. I think you have to read the complaint as a whole as to opposed to saying, and as a result of their negligent failure to mark it on that date, it led to his injury. When you read it as a whole, it comes down to they negligently failed to mark it. As a result of their negligence, he was injured, and he's entitled to recover for that. And so, again, I would ask that the court reinstate this. Oh, and the request that we be allowed to amend was in the brief to the district court. It was not addressed by the district court. Thank you.
Counsel, the matter is deemed submitted. We will issue a decision in the statutory 90-day time frame.